Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new The Hacker Factory podcast with hacker maker Philip Wiley. You're about to discover what the role of a professional hacker entails, the different specializations it holds, and what it takes to learn and become one. Enjoy the conversation as Philip and guests unveil the secrets of professional hacking. A mysterious, intriguing, and often misunderstood occupation. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
BugCrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com.
Hello and welcome to this episode of the Hacker Factory podcast. I'm your host, Philip Wiley. I refer to myself as the Hacker Maker because I'm passionate about educating, mentoring, and helping people get started in offensive cybersecurity. Each episode, I have a really unique guest sharing their story of how they got started and some knowledge to help you on your path. And this episode, I am very happy to announce my friend, Aleith Dennis, joining us today. She's got a very cool story, and I'm sure you're going to love it. So thanks for joining, Aleith.
Thank you so much for having me. It is an absolute pleasure to be talking to you again. I think the last time that we spoke, I was still on this journey, fully immersed in the journey from making the transition from a different industry sector into information security fully, full-time. And we spoke with both Chloe and Alyssa on the Uncommon Journey podcast. So a little bit about me. My name is Aleith Dennis, and I am a consultant on the professional services team at CI Security, now known as Critical Insight. The company is based out of the Seattle area, and we focus predominantly on critical infrastructure, organizations like hospitals, water systems, manufacturing, and organizations that may not have access to some of the fancier security tools and features and budgets that most of the Fortune 500 have access to these days. So that's kind of where I've been focused lately, is doing focus security assessments, readiness assessments for compliance towards specific frameworks, things like HIPAA security risk assessments, while also getting to dabble in red team type fun, which is, of course, where I kind of got my start, but doing pen tests and specifically social engineering, phishing and vishing. I think most people know me from the social engineering capture the flag contest at DEF CON. And while there are many podcasts you can go listen to about that experience, I won't dwell on that now. That is kind of how I ended up getting started in this field. I was working in market intelligence, doing research and analysis, lots of OSINT. I had not heard that term yet the first time I went to DEF CON. And although I was a partner in a IT MSP company, we weren't really focused on the security side of stuff until after we went to DEF CON and learned a bunch about, vulnerabilities and, the potential risk that our clients were facing. So after a while, we kind of switched gears and shifted away from strictly IT into offering more security-focused services. And then eventually our company kind of evolved into a voice over IP phone service company. And we split off the IT services to a different provider and had to really take a serious look at security as it relates to VoIP and SIP trunks and all of the infrastructure that goes into making voice over IP work. At DEF CON, I fell in love with the social engineering village just because I think it's something that I had been kind of doing my entire life, whether it was for the right or wrong reasons. I guess you'd have to decide that, but it gave me an avenue to use those skills in a more positive and productive way, I'll put it that way. So really how I found my footing to get into this as a full-time job was that I got involved with the SECTF, the Social Engineering Capture the Flag contest. And then I started participating in every OSINT CTF that I could possibly participate in remotely, whether I was doing that as a judge or volunteer or participating as a contestant. And through networking with all the individuals that I met through doing these competitions, I started to meet people that were similarly focused, who had the same kind of goals, both career and work-wise. I think you're one of those people, of course, Philip. Both of us are ILF ambassadors for the Innocent Lives Foundation, and I think that that's another way that we've become more engaged with this community, is by supporting organizations such as the Innocent Lives Foundation, which helps to unmask predators of children online, and then deliver that information to law enforcement so that they can get those people brought to justice. But yeah, that's kind of how I got started, is participating in competitions. And I think that that's really a key aspect of the getting started portion of getting into InfoSec that kind of gets glossed over. I hear a lot of people recommend trainings and recommend, you know, going to school for certain subjects and studying for this, or essentially all of the you know, practical and school book knowledge that you need to acquire to be successful. I don't think that any one person could possibly be a specialist in every area of security. So it's kind of nice to compete in contests like CTFs, because you get to get a taste of what it's like to work in a specific area, with the fun of having it be a competition. So trying to get out there and get involved in the community is my number one recommendation to anyone who's looking to get into information security or hacking, because the people you meet can introduce you to all the resources that you need. And that's where I really find that I've had the most success, despite, you know, trying a bunch of different courses and doing tons of, you know, research and reading a bazillion books and really fully immersing myself in this side of every industry, because I think, you know, cybersecurity, information security, all of that is universal. This is not something that is really set in one, you know, industry sector. We affect them all. And so to learn as much as you can about what you think you need to know is kind of difficult. But if you get in there and you actually have an opportunity to try to do something, then you can see what about it you like, what skills you have from maybe your current roles or from school that are easily transferable from what you've been doing to what you're doing now. For example, with me, I had many years of experience as a consultant. And so I was really in a great position to take those skills, consulting for Fortune 500, Fortune 100 companies, and just kind of segue that over into information security consulting on a professional services team. Because I know how to talk to clients, I know how to do project management, I know how to do all of these communication and writing and soft skills that are extremely important in security, and that kind of get glossed over. But if you are, you know, say you're maybe the most elite hacker in the universe, but you can't effectively communicate what you did, how you did it, or how your client can patch that vulnerability, or, you know, improve their security posture, then you're not going to be effective as a consultant, for example. But there are many roles within information security that will draw from a variety of different talents. You don't have to be a super personable people person to be successful. You just have to be very skilled at communicating your findings and focus on being a part of a team and driving towards a common goal. And I think that anyone who takes that to heart will find success in this area, because even though hacking in big giant quotes is typically thought of as, you know, a solo sport, now that we're kind of moving into this world where people get to hack full time and get paid to do it, that, you know, this, you're going to be playing as a part of a team any way you slice it. So as far as how I got started, my journey is a little bit non-traditional. You know, I did start out doing a degree in computer science and chemical and molecular sciences. And although I didn't finish that, it's always been something that I've been very passionate about. Computers, systems, logic, it's like it's on or it's off. And I really love that about computing and networking, is that there really isn't too much of a gray area. Now, maybe a little bit more so with the newer technologies that we have, but in the past, that was something that really spoke to me, that and not having to talk to a lot of people. So then fast forward 20 years, and now all I do all day is talk to people. So be prepared to kind of evolve through your career with the different opportunities that are going to be presented to you. I was thinking about this morning. I heard in high school that me would potentially have 4 different careers in your lifetime. And when you talk about, you know, previous generations, they really just studied for one thing. They got really good at it. They went to work at a company that did it. And then they did that their whole lives. And then they retired at the same company. And that was kind of the expectation of the, you know, the nuclear family, the perfect American dream, was that you just get a job, you do it well, you retire, you get the gold watch, and then you live out the rest of your days. I don't think any of us are going to fit into that box at all. Especially if you're here listening to the Hacker Factory, I know you're not going to fit in that box. So I've worked in, you know, staffing. I've worked in a startup that was a competitor to Instagram. We all know how that turned out. I don't want to hear about it. So then I've also worked in another company that created a CRM, or customer relationship management software, for car dealerships. So I got to learn way too much about sales from these car salesmen and this crazy environment, but it was a whole lot of fun. And all of these skills just kind of built on top of each other as I went from one job to the next. And I think that I am easily, I mean, if you count working at a pet store, I think I'm easily on my 5th or 6th different, like, career, not just job, but career in life. And I'm only probably about halfway through my working career. So that's pretty crazy. And I think what that really demonstrates is that it doesn't really matter where you are now. It doesn't really matter what skills you think you're limited by, because this is all you know, in quotes, know how to do or have done, so you'll just keep doing it. And I see a lot of people kind of repeat that pattern. Like, they work at a car dealership, they leave the car dealership, they go to the next car dealership and the next car dealership and the next car, and that's just like everything for the rest of their lives is just in this one vein. And I think that if you're listening to this podcast and you're interested in jumping into information security, you're not one of those people. So jot down all the skills that you have, the things that you're really good at, that you're passionate about, and that you love to do on like a daily basis, because this is an everyday thing. Then try to figure out which of those skills are transferable into information security. There's going to be a lot, especially soft skills like communication and people-based skills. But also jot down your hard skills, like what, you know, types of technologies do you know, software do you use, languages do you code in, that kind of stuff. And then go look at job descriptions at the companies that you want to work at. Go look and see what their requirements are and try to figure out, you can do searches for the skills that you have and then see what jobs come up. Then you're going to look at the titles of those jobs, look at the descriptions of those jobs, and figure out if that's something that you want to drive towards. And what other skills and requirements do you need to get there? Does it require a degree? What kind of degree? Does it require years of experience in these specific things? What specific things are those? And then you can kind of reverse engineer your skills from the job that you want to have. And eventually you're going to use that same skill to reverse engineer your resume. You'll look at the job that you want, and then you'll create a resume that looks like the perfect resume for that job listing. And that's a skill that I found through Jason Blanchard. He's also known as Banjo Crashland. Yes, really, Banjo Crashland on Twitch. And he does live streams where he helps folks look for jobs, create their resume, and put together the perfect resume for the job that they want to give them the most success at getting the interview and then, you know, eventually hopefully landing the job. So trying to focus on skills and boiling those down into the smallest pieces, I think, is the best way to approach getting into information security. For me, it took me winning a black badge at DEF CON for people to even think that I may sort of be okay to work in this industry sector, which is kind of crazy if you think about it. There were like two types of people. Those that were like, oh, she's just a social engineer that got lucky and won a black badge. And then there were the other side of the coin that were just like, oh my gosh, she must be like just poning things all day long. And she's like super technical and crazy. And, you know, really, really accomplished hacker. So I'm definitely somewhere in the middle. And I would say that while I appreciate those that think I'm super elite, I've always had insurmountable imposter syndrome. So last time we spoke, I was really, really battling that because I was working for the staffing company doing market intelligence and consulting through Dragonfly Security to do social engineering awareness training and then social engineering assessments, phishing, and all that stuff. And it was only after I found Critical Insight that they were like, you know, you should come work for us full time. And I was like, yes, please. And so it's been an incredible experience because I've really had an opportunity to see a variety of different types of engagements, which is great. And it's really great having a team that handles all of the, you know, organizational, administrative, marketing, sales, you know, scheduling, all of that stuff. And so I just get to come in and do the work, which is fantastic. But it's been incredibly fulfilling. And it's really, really wonderful to get to work with a team who are just incredibly positive and super motivated, and everybody, you know, contributes equally, and nobody is disparaging or discriminating, or there's no like tension. I know that this sounds crazy because you think, well, of course nobody's going to be a jerk. Actually, it happens a lot, especially at bigger companies. It's tough to get along with everyone, especially at larger companies where I think that the divisions between departments are much wider. So CI is technically a startup, but they're a little bit further on down the road than I would say most of the startups that I've worked for or started myself in the past. So it's kind of nice because I get the benefit of, you know, an established company without all of the politics and the red tape and the bureaucratic BS that comes with like Fortune, you know, 200 nonsense. So, yeah, I mean, I would say for those who are really enthusiastic about making information security, cybersecurity, whatever you want to call it, your day job, the best thing that you can do is to network, participate, get involved in your community, find your nearest DEF CON group, find your nearest B-sides, go to conferences when that's allowed in person or virtually, whatever, whatever makes the most sense for you and is safe for you to do. And just start talking to people. I went to DEF CON the first couple of years and just kind of hung back with the people that I came with. And the experience was a heck of a lot different than the last few years that I've gone, where I was competing, I knew people, I'm kind of an introvert, and I'm a little bit apprehensive about starting conversations. So I started this thing, the word stalking kind of has a negative connotation, but I started this thing called Stalk Me for Stickers because I was so apprehensive about introducing myself to people at DEF CON, and I really wanted a way to start conversations with people and kind of be forced to do that. And I noticed that through Badge Life, like the electronic badge community, and going and, you know, scouting out the drops for those and trying to be the first one to get one. And I met a ton of people and I was like, well, that's cool. I can make a badge. And then I was like, whew, that's hard. I was like, I can do stickers. So it was kind of funny. The first year, the Mr. Robot badge, the person that came up with that, they sent me 50 stickers when I asked for one and said I would happily pay for it to replace one that was on my laptop that had, you know, that I'd sold. And anyway, so he sent me 50. And I didn't know what to do with them. I felt a little selfish keeping them all for myself. So I decided I would give them out one at a time at DEF CON, but I would make people earn it. And I was going to make people find me and then give me a password. Because, you know, these stickers had value to me, and I wanted to make sure that they had value to the people that were taking them from me. So I made the password. That scene in Ace Ventura when he goes down into the, like, metal club to find the hackers. He's got to give them the password, and the password is New England clam chowder. So that was the password. And I was like, anybody who finds me, tell me the password, and then you get a sticker. And it was like the little Mr. Robot mask, similar to the stickers that I made this year, but we'll get to that later. So anyway, the first person that ran up to me, like ran at me, and I'd posted what I was wearing on Twitter. And so they were like, just screamed at me, New England clam chowder. I'm like walking down the stairs to one of the Caesars properties. And I hadn't told my husband what was going on. So he's like, what is happening? And I was like, dude, you're awesome. And I was like pulling a sticker out of my bag, and my husband's just standing there like, what is happening right now? So I filled him in after that, but it was pretty funny of seeing the look on his face. And then it started, like, just kind of spiraled out of control. So I ended up giving away like 50 stickers in like a day and a half, and nobody knew who I was. I hadn't even competed yet. This was like really early on. And so it gave me an excuse to meet a bunch of people. And the next year I was like, I'm going to do this again. So I had a designer friend who helped me create like 3 or 4 different sticker designs. And I had like literally 700 stickers made. And over the next couple of years, I gave those out at DEF CON and Derby CON kind of the same way. And I started meeting, you know, more people, more speakers. And then those people introduced me to other people. And then this last year, it was like, I couldn't get in the door without people going, you got stickers? So it's been a lot of fun just having kind of an excuse to start a conversation with people. But I would say that I've gotten so much more out of conferences, talking to people and networking with new people and learning about what they do. And those conversations have opened doors, like, hey, you should apply for this job, you know, say that I referred you. And I'm going to be honest, like, it's really not so much about what you know and what you can prove that you know with smaller firms that may be more willing to hire entry level positions and kind of take a chance on somebody with less experience. It's really about who you know. So if you've got somebody that's on the team that you want to be on, that you know personally, that can, you know, give you a referral or pass your resume along to the decision maker, that's going to be so much more beneficial than being able to hand, you know, one of the top technical, you know, pen testing or top certification issuing companies the perfect resume. Because people hire people they like. And if somebody can say that they like you and vouch for you, that right there is like two out of the six principles of persuasion that you have in your back pocket getting into that job. And I want you to fully utilize every social engineering skill that you have to get a job. I can't even tell you what a difference my interviews have experienced from before social engineering to after social engineering. My communication skills, the way that I craft my responses to interview questions, all of that was made infinitely better through learning about social engineering and persuasion and influence and leadership. And I'm kind of at my threshold for my limit on mentees right now, but that does not mean that I do not have time to point you in the right direction of some really great books and some really great people and some wonderful websites that have tons of resources on them that you can use to do that for yourself. I did not pay for any social engineering courses. I did not take any trainings for social engineering. It is something that does come a little bit more naturally to me. And I think that if you were a latchkey or a kid who had the opportunity to grow through adversity as a kid, and what I mean is you had a difficult childhood, then I think that you may be pretty wonderfully set up to have these skills as well. I find that most people that do well and take to this naturally are from more challenging backgrounds and have had to kind of problem solve in creative ways. And that's another thing that is super critical when it comes to security and hacking is having those critical thinking skills, being able to solve problems on your own without a process doc, being able to legitimately troubleshoot something and have the knowledge and the expertise to understand what the next step is, and coming up with that game plan yourself. Kind of a silly story, but my grandfather had an iPhone and he was struggling because every time the phone rang, the screen was blank and it wouldn't let him answer it. And he was super frustrated because if somebody in his address book called, the phone rang and he could answer it just fine. But anytime that the phone rang aside from that, the screen is black and he can't answer it and he can't figure out what's going on. So he took it to his wireless provider and their salespeople tried to fix the problem, couldn't figure anything was wrong. It still kept doing it. So he took it to Apple, took it to the Genius Bar. They troubleshot things and went through it with him, couldn't figure it out, and it was still happening. And he happened to mention it to me on the phone. And I said, well, what ringtone are you using for your ringer? And he said, oh, it's, you know, the old school telephone ringtone. And I said, okay, go into your sounds on the phone and make sure you don't have anything else set to that ringtone, because it sounds to me like you're getting a notification for something else and it's just the same audio tone. And so you're being confused by that. Sure enough, he had his emails set to that ring. And I was able to figure that out over the phone without touching the iPhone and within a few minutes, and his mind was just blown. I'm not tooting my own horn. I'm just saying that we're, you know, training people at these organizations to follow a process doc, and they just follow step 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And if that doesn't fix the problem, they kind of throw their hands up and go, I don't know, I can't help you. You need to be able to go beyond that and really understand the systems that you're working in, know how they work, so that when you're troubleshooting something, you can anticipate and through process of elimination, figure out what that is. Those skills are invaluable going forward, and they're ultimately transferable to anything in security. The ability to quickly diagnose, react, and respond, I mean, that's like essential. And so if you can get an entry, if say you can't get an entry level job in security, you know, challenge yourself and get an entry level job in IT and then try to acquire as many skills as you can that transfer over into security using the method that we talked about before. Make sure it's part of your roadmap that you figured out from the requirements of your dream job. I worked on a project a couple years ago through the staffing company where we determined what the most needed roles would be in cybersecurity for the manufacturing sector. And I did all of the data analysis and research and kind of put together what the top jobs would be. And then my team and I put together the roadmap essentially for each of those 20, I think it's 20 positions, like what's the entry level job, what's the mid level job, and then what's the job that is going to be, you know, the management or directorial type level job. And how do people get there? What training do we start offering folks now to make sure that they're ready for those entry level jobs? And so our emerging workforce is ready to fill all of these manufacturing cybersecurity jobs. And that was a really fun project to work on. It's out there and I'm happy to share the PDF. I think they recently updated the PDF. It is specific to manufacturing, but it'll give you kind of an idea of what it is that you want to do. And that's pick an entry-level role that has the most skills that are transferable to the next role that you want and eventually your dream job role. And through experience and networking, I really strongly believe that you will put yourself in the best position possible to apply for the dream job and get it. Sincerely.
That's great advice and some very interesting, unique things that I hadn't seen before. But yeah, going back to the troubleshooting thing with the iPhone, I mean, like for me getting in to a pen testing role, I've noticed that, you know, the troubleshooting experience helped. And that's kind of important for developing that hacker mindset too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I could not agree more. I think most of us push boundaries on systems. I mean, that's kind of the definition of hacking, is trying to get things to do things that they're not specifically intended to do. When I was a kid, it kind of manifested itself in payphones and trying to get free calls and manipulating vending machines. I think the statute of limitations has passed, but we would definitely mess with vending machines to see if we could get it to give us free stuff. And I lived on a college campus as a kid. So I'm like 12 and I live on a college campus and I'm already like 5'8". So everybody just assumed that I was a college kid. So I just kind of got away with murder. Because they're like, you know, and I was not like especially immature or anything, but I was definitely not 18 or 19 years old, but I was just carrying myself like I was. And I was never a super confident kid. I was a little chubby and I was super insecure about it, but I would just do whatever I wanted because that's just kind of the personality that I had. We would spend a whole day dragging all of our clothes to the laundromat and then have to find something to keep us occupied while we wait for clothes to wash and dry and stuff. And I kind of had to like shepherd my little brothers. So it was like, I spent a whole Saturday like on rollerblading around a college campus and just messing with stuff. When we had school fundraisers, we would go buy extra candy from, you know, the drugstore or something, and then kind of like pad the box with that stuff. Cause you know, the school fundraiser candy is garbage. So we would like put all the really cool stuff on top and then sell that and then keep the profits. So we would have like, you know, Butterfingers and Twix and all that stuff sitting on top of the, you know, nasty fundraiser chocolate candy bars. And then we would go hit up all of the college dorms, like right around late afternoon after class time, if you get my drift. before 5 o'clock is. So anyway, we would go hit them up because we knew that they were just like ready to buy at that time. And so we would just like unload like hundreds of dollars in chocolate to these college kids, and we would just go blow it on stupid stuff and ride the bus around downtown. I actually forged bus passes as a welfare kid. We would get issued like a free bus pass. And so every bus trip was like a dollar, and, we had these unlimited bus passes. You just show it when you get up on the steps and they let you ride the bus wherever you want. Well, after a while, they eliminated the free bus pass from the thing. But I had them like every year, and all it was like a colored piece of card, sort of like a colored index card. And it was a different color every month. So I just had to figure out what color it was that month. And then I would go photocopy it and then use previous bus pass font like letters and like copy that and then like cut the right numbers in to make the right month and year and that kind of stuff. And so I started forging bus passes for myself and my brothers so that we could keep riding the bus for free. And because we'd had it so long, the bus driver really didn't even question it because it had always been the norm for us to get a new bus pass every month. And so we would just have to like flash it real quick and then walk. And then after a while, they wouldn't even check it for that month. So yeah, we started riding the bus for free and shoplifting, and everything kind of went a little crazy there for a while. It got to the point where myself and my friends would walk into a store and like the adults would follow us. So we definitely got a reputation, kind of had to back off that for a while. But I think having the freedom, my mom was just a really chill parent, but having the freedom to do that. And like, I mean, we were literally downtown at the age of 11 by ourselves, running around in different stores with friends and riding the bus by ourselves. Like, I would never let my kids do that stuff nowadays, but it just gave me this opportunity to develop all of these skills that I otherwise wouldn't have had if I'd been, you know, with a parent or had a ton of money. We would figure out how to sneak in to watch movies and just how to solve that problem was where these kinds of skills came from for me. Like, how do I solve the problem of I have no money, but I want to go watch a movie? And so I've told the story before, but essentially a friend and I would pair up. And one of us would say we needed to call our parent because back then there were no cell phones to come pick us up. And so that friend would go into the lobby of the movie theater and then open a side door to let the other one in. And then we would just go to whatever movie we wanted to see. And now that I think back on it, I'm sure that the theater staff knew. Like, I'm positive that they knew, because there were some movies where it was just myself and my friend. They knew they didn't sell any tickets for that movie, but yet there were people in the theater. And so, yeah, I'm sure they knew, and they were just like, they're not hurting anything, so whatever. They have to show the movie anyway, right? But it was definitely an experience, and I think that ultimately that's what kind of drew me into this universe. That, and I saw the movie Hackers when I was very, very much on like the threshold of trying to figure out what I wanted to be when I grow up. You know, before 16, but after 12, and it just kind of like hit all the right notes for me. And so for the longest time, and still that movie is incredibly special to me. But for the longest time, that was like, that's the goal. And then, I went to DEF CON for the first time, and it was like, holy crap, I found my people. Like, it was the weirdest thing. Like, it just felt suddenly like I was at home, like suddenly I'd found home. And here it was. And that's why it's so important to me to go back every time, because I just feel like DEF CON is this island of misfit toys, and all of us kind of feel a little out of place in our normal lives. And so we get to go there to kind of feel like we belong with each other and just kind of, I don't know, commune with that and be weird together and break things together and push boundaries together and have inflatable T-Rex fights in the middle of the game together. So yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, it's an awesome culture. I know what you mean by finding your people. I mean, just that whole, because I used to do, you know, went to local conferences at first just in the Dallas area. And then, you know, I did some outside of Dallas, but it wasn't until you got to like DEF CON and Derby CON that you really didn't appreciate the culture until you've experienced those conferences.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, Derby. I only got to go to the final Derby, and I'm so devastated that I didn't have the means to make it work. I know for many people, DEF CON is kind of a intangible reality because of the cost and the expense. But I will share that if you are interested in going to DEF CON, and maybe it's not something that is in the budget, reach out to me because there are other ways that you can get involved. One of those is to become a Black Hat associate. The Black Hat associates help to set up and administer, support, and then break down Black Hat each year. And through performing that volunteer service, they are rewarded with some things that may make it more feasible for folks to go to DEF CON, including a DEF CON badge for attendance. So there are some things that you can do and ways that you can get involved that satisfy that whole networking thing, but also give you the benefit of allowing you to attend things like DEF CON with a much smaller out-of-pocket cost to you. So if you can only get your employer or your budget to cover a percentage, then maybe that can relieve some of the burden and make it more feasible for folks. I know that they are always looking for new folks to join that program. Anyone from college students up, you're more than welcome. And it's another great way to make some friends because you'll be working with the same group of people to perform your duties and then have friends already when you get ready to go to DEF CON. It'll be a little bit less overwhelming if it's your first time and kind of give you an island or an anchor to go back to. I am kind of an introvert. So on like day three of DEF CON, I'm a little tired of peopling. So it's nice. It's nice to have folks that you can just kind of kick back with and go get dinner and have a couple drinks and relax, rather than just being kind of thrown into the mix of, you know, this year was 8,000, but typically, you know, 20 to 30,000 people is a lot of peopling.
Yeah. Speaking of conferences, I guess the last one I saw yet was during the Social Engineering Village at DerbyCon.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. Cause I remember you were there with your baby.
Yep. So crazy. I don't recommend that at all. So, I did DEF CON and I competed and then won the SECTF in 2019 with my 3-month-old baby with me. And my husband was with me at DEF CON. So he helped to make sure I didn't have a mom meltdown, by taking care of her. And then, for Derby CON, I took my 4-month-old baby because it was a month after, which, man, that was a quick turnaround there. But I took 4-month-old baby and we went out to Derby CON by ourselves, just the two of us. And I managed to snag a room in like the last block of hotel rooms that Derby CON released in the hotel. And I'm so glad because it made it so much easier just to be able to go up and down an elevator rather than traveling from hotel to hotel or something crazy. But I had some really great friends with me. Whitney Maxwell and Kat Murdoch were there. Kat is probably most well known for being a part of SE Village for a number of years. And then of course, Whitney, she won the black badge for the Social Engineering Capture the Flag contest the year before I did, the year that I first competed and got sixth. So she's a really, really wonderful person. We're actually, the two of us are judging the collegiate SECTF later on this fall. So that's coming up. That's actually, I think that it's still open if there are any collegiate teams that want to apply to compete in a Social Engineering Capture the Flag. Hey, that's a good way to get involved. But hit me up and I can get you details. But collegiate SECTF, if you Google it, I'm sure you'll find it. And it's through the Temple University. And so she and I will be doing that along with Snow and Tinker and Patrick from Layer 8. And he's also an ILF ambassador, BDW. It's kind of a running theme. And I think that's because, you know, so many of us are passionate about the Innocent Lives Foundation, but also it seems to be the social engineers, I think, who appreciate preventing the psychological predators most, because we understand how dangerous they are. But anyway, so those folks and I, and I think we have a couple new judges, but I don't recall who they are at this moment. So check that out, because that looks like a lot of fun. And then, of course, you can also get involved with the Trace Labs OSINT CTFs for missing persons. Those do good. They are not what we call theoretical CTFs. They're in reality, where you actually help law enforcement find information that could crack cold cases for missing persons and help give their families some closure. And then I think lastly, I have a fun appearance. I'm not speaking for the rest of this year, I don't think. I may have a couple more podcasts up my sleeve yet to be announced, but I will be doing a workshop at B-Sides Orlando. It is virtual. I think I've got 10 seats left right now. That may change by the time this podcast goes out, but I'm going to try to accommodate everyone if possible. But I'll be doing a workshop on strategies and tactics to compete in OSINT CTFs. And so if you're interested in essentially getting my playbook for how I won the SECTF and how I won a Trace Labs OSINT CTF with my team, you know, hit that up, because it's essentially all the things and it's live and it's, I try to make it fun.
Very cool. So yeah, I've got that one coming up as well soon. Well, the good thing is now we're not booked at the same time either. So.
Yes, for once. I got a ticket. I got a ticket for yours. And I was yes. Yeah, I did. I snagged one and I blocked out my whole day. Somebody tried to schedule like a pen test kickoff over the top. And I was like, nope. I have work to do. So I will definitely be there. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a really fun day.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that conference and good people that run it and organize that conference.
So somebody who shall remain nameless screen capped me one of the messages in their Slack. And it was like, somebody was asking what they were going to give me for the workshop. And Ian responded and was just like, Elite gets whatever Elite wants. And I was like, yes, yes, I do. Eventually I'll SE it out of you, so just might as well pony it up right now. I don't even know what it was they were talking about.
That's funny. But we're down to the end of the show. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we end?
No, this has been absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for having me on again. It's always fun chatting, and hopefully this will help some folks gain maybe the confidence I didn't have early on to start planning their attack to get into information security and cybersecurity.
Yeah, thanks for sharing information. I think people will find it very useful and enjoy your story. So thanks for joining everyone, and we'll see you on the next episode.
BugCrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Hacker Factory podcast with Philip Wiley. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share itsbmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.